Blog Talk Radio.
We've got film. And we've got psychology. When we put the two together, we've got filmcology. Each week, we will look at the psychology of the characters in film, and it gives us something lovely to think about. So, let's get started. Filmcology is now.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Thursday. It is so bright and beautiful here in the Pacific Northwest. I know that it's a bit tough for everyone around the nation, but if you're feeling that cabin fever kind of thing, being locked up behind snow and ice, then you're probably at the best place if you're listening to this show. And, of course, you've watched the Silver Linings Playbook. This is a wonderful show. Movie. It's a wonderful show, too. But it's a wonderful movie because it talks about some aspects of what is called bipolar issues. And that particular word has gone through a whole lot of transitions, and that's probably because psychology diagnostic manual, the big Bible for us psychologists and counselors, well, it went through a gigantic change, and they came up with the new one in May, I believe, of 2013. And so now we're on to this new push. I'm just going to give you a little background about that before we get really into the movie. Psychology, just like any other science, and it is a science. I mean, some of you may not think that, but there are scientific aspects about it. There's a lot of science to it. But anyway, it has learned over the years that some things that were first thought of as, you know, a certain kind of disorder have turned out to be no longer a disorder, just happens to be a way of life or a lifestyle or something like that. So what's going on with bipolar is there's a whole bunch of other diagnostic categories that used to be part of, well, there used to be like manic depressive, now that's being couched in under bipolar and probably a lot of other behaviors, which might make it really confusing for people. When you meet someone, they say, oh, they have bipolar or they're bipolar or something like that. But they're not quite the same as maybe your dad who seems bipolar or the priest who seems bipolar, whoever. It's rather common, and it's probably because it's got a whole lot of previous disorders now under the same heading. So everybody doesn't sort of seem and act quite the same. What's interesting about this film is it gives you some idea about sort of bipolar people, and there's three great examples in the film with the dad, with the son, and with the sort of crazy lady that you may think is crazy, and she's not crazy at all. She's just a regular human being. And the other thing that I like about this film is the fact that it talks about life and people who are experiencing this particular disorder. So, you know, mental. To me, I tend to look at things in terms of mental balance. I don't look at things as you're just mentally ill. I know that that's a catch that's used a lot, but listen, we're all people, and we all have all these different differences, and there's no reason to be fearful of somebody just because they may have a different type of balance going on either physiologically in their brain or just, you know, something's happened to them that has pushed them to a certain aspect. But things to look at in this film are, could there possibly be some genetic connections? And if you've watched the film, you might have some suspicions, like most psychologists would, based on what you see in the father. and then what you see with the dad, and there's another dynamic, people who are involved with people who have bipolar disorders, you know, they have a lot to deal with, just like people have to deal with people who are alcoholic, or if you have somebody in your life that's always happy, you have to deal with that too if you're not necessarily always a happy person. And you kind of like to be, you know, you like to listen to sort of dark stuff, and you like to wear gothic wear. You know, having somebody who's perpetually happy may just sort of bother your consciousness at any given time. This all sounds like I'm off on another tangent, but my point is really this. People are people, and there's nothing wrong with them, and there's nothing wrong with somebody who has some attribute in mental health and balance that they need to manage, either with their behavior, the learned behavior, or medication. So with that, let's go on into the film. We have our first caller, and I believe that would be, would you like to introduce yourself, ma'am?
Hi, everybody. It's Lynis.
Hi.
It's
so
really
glad to
good.
Have you here. Did you
Lydia's
get
here
watch?
Too?
No, not yet. But did you get a chance to review the film?
Yes. And I'll just say this right quick, Brenda. It made me think about Michelle and Isaiah. You know who I'm talking about. The mother whose son is
by.
Yeah.
Yes.
Really interesting, because it is something that is misunderstood and is not always found right away in examination.
True.
So, yeah. But anyway, enough. Let's get back to your film. I don't want to get off on that. But, yeah, this is good.
Okay. I'm going to give you the definition from the National Institute of Mental Health. .gov about what bipolar is, because you probably need to sort of get an idea about that before if you don't really know, you may have a different perspective about the characters in this film. It's known as a manic depressive illness, and it is a brain disorder that causes unusual shifts in mood, energy, activity levels, and the ability to carry out day-to-day tasks. And so sometimes they are very severe symptoms. They tend to be different from normal ups and downs that everyone else experiences from time to time. And it says this kind of disorder can result in damaged relationships, poor job, school performance, and unfortunately, it could possibly lead to suicide. It can be treated, and it says that people of this illness can lead full and productive lives. And it usually develops in the late teens, and this probably applies to what Lynis, you know, somebody that she knows, and or early adult years. And in they do find it in children occasionally, but sometimes you just don't see it represent, or at least you don't think so, because there are different things about life that might make it come out, you know, sooner or later. It says at least half of the cases start before age 25. There's my other co-host, Pepper. She always has something to say about a lot of things. So anyway,
go on, Pepper.
Football, and we'll take into her suggestions later. Okay, and so it says that some people have their first symptoms during childhood. Others may develop the symptoms late in life. And they also point out it's not easy to spot when it actually starts, which actually happens sometimes with Alzheimer's too. I mean, so I know there's a lot of people who say, well, they never act like that before. They may have had aspects, but you're not probably trained to recognize signs. And there are people in psychology who may have missed it too, because, you know, people don't sit there and observe someone under a microscope 24 hours a day, generally, even the people in their own lives.
Yeah.
He said some people, the National Institute of Mental Health says that some people suffer for years before they're properly diagnosed. And it's like diabetes or heart disease. It is a long-term illness that must be carefully managed throughout a person's life. And real quickly, some of the symptoms. They're intense emotional states that occur in distinct periods, like what they call mood periods. They're either overly joyful or overly excited. And those are the manic phases that people are sort of like, what the heck's going on? They can be extremely sad or hopeless, which is the depressive mode. So there's manic, there's depressive. And a mood episode includes symptoms of both mania and depression. So, for instance, somebody may not ever seem to have overly high joys. Like you might meet someone who's bipolar and they don't seem to be overly happy all the time, or they don't go through these big giant shifts of, you know, polarization, really high, really low. They just always seem to be one sort of affect, but it doesn't mean they're not bipolar. There's other things about their sleeping, their habits. Okay, so I think we have a pretty good idea about bipolar. You know, try to look it up and just read a little bit about it. If you think or suspect you have someone in your life has bipolar attributes, and above all, try not to judge people. And don't treat them like pariahs. They're just regular people like you and me. We all have quirks. May not be diagnosed or something, but we all have quirks. I got a thing for bourbon and monster movies. Okay? You know, there's nothing mean that I have a mental illness. Contrary to what some of the people in my life might suggest.
You and your cousin.
Am I what?
You and your cousin.
Oh, yes. Oh,
great movies,
God.
Yeah. Anyway.
yeah, absolutely. One of the things I love her more than anything for is because she can, you know, she can get down dirty with the monster movies. Okay, and we have a third caller. That?
Yes.
Would you like to introduce yourself, ma'am?
Hi, Brenda.
Hi, sweetie.
Hi.
How are you this?
I'm doing
great. Absolutely.
Excellent.
Yes.
Love this movie.
You're the one that said, as a matter of fact, ladies and gentlemen, you can suggest movies to me. You can probably suggest them through Blog Talk, you know, send some little message in through there. Or you can go to my website. It's jimsonberry.com. That's JIMSONBERRY .com. Yeah, is that what I said? JimsonBerry.com.
Yeah.
Or you can send me an email at jimsonberry@gmail.com, and you can suggest a movie that you would like us to review or look into for Filmcology. And so Lydia suggested Silver Linings Playbook, and I'd heard about it, but I hadn't had a chance to watch it, and then found out she hadn't watched it, but
yep. Uh-huh.
And we finally got to it, and I am so glad I watched it. So the whole opening scene is this person who's sort of going through some almost obsessive issues. And then you realize that he's in an institution. He's probably in a hospital or some kind of assisted type living situation.
It's a hospital because it's court ordered.
Yes. Oh, okay, that's right. Well, okay, it's a hospital. I don't know. There's always this negativity stuff with that I don't like in psychology, but okay, yes, he is actually in a hospital. And then you see somebody come to pick him up, which turns out to be his mother. And there's things about that I'll talk about psychologically for later. But then one of his pals from his group therapy sessions, he asks, I mean, this is how it starts. You know, can you take, drop him off? And it's like, yeah, okay. And he's got his suitcase, and he's like, yeah, everyone's leaving the same time today or something. And then they find out that he's actually escaped, and he has to go back to the he's going to go back to the hospital, and that pal is Chris Tucker, who, oh, my goodness, he is just a nut. He's hilarious, and I just think he's just a wonderful actor. So here we are. We head home. This guy who gets out of this hospital, not because they say he's ready to be out of the hospital, but because Mom wants him out of the hospital. We think that's what it's really for. Then we find out that Dad has this thing about gambling, and there are things he wants to be into place so that he can win his sports bets. And he sees his son as a luck charm. And so son has to be around in place so that he can win this bet because blah, 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 blah. So here's this household that we're coming into. Not only is Dad sitting there betting on the game, but there's other people there, like the guy the dad is bet, the bookie that the dad has placed his bets with, and someone. But it's just this. It's a situation where you would think somebody that you're bringing out of a hospital wouldn't come into this fray of people and personalities, which. Somebody, you know, with a little more professional skills would have suggested it's probably not a good idea. So
Brenda, not to interrupt you.
That's how the whole movie starts out. Pardon?
Oh, okay. Not to interrupt you, but I want to, when you were saying, you know, he went to the hospital and what bipolar is, but also what got him in the hospital was that he caught his wife with another man.
Yeah, we find that out as... They start to reveal how this guy ended up in the hospital. And as Linus has brought out, the reveal is that actually the more that's revealed is he was overweight and his wife are both teachers, and he finds his wife at home in the shower having sex with this, I can't remember if the guy was I think he was a math teacher.
No, history.
And,
oh, you know, yeah, you're right.
And he was, this is the way the film is, but anyway, the way they portray that math teacher, he's creepy almost looking to me. He just has this sort of, he's lanky and he seems sort of, maybe it's just the fact that the way he's caught, he just seems so snivelly or something. Maybe it's just my own bias about doing that to somebody. You know, why would you do that to somebody? It's like...
No, I think he was creepy.
Yeah, but... You know, but we are talking about the man's wife who is not creepy looking anyway, which, hey, you know, there's another aspect to that we can discuss later. It's like how creepy you are inside and how creepy you are on the outside. So, yeah, she looks like this, you know, really nice looking woman. And I guess that's part of, like, this weird irony about this. Is like she looks like this, you know, really nice looking woman, and she's with this sort of creepy looking guy. That you're gonna have an affair with that on your husband, and then, you know, the husband, which we don't really ever see him large, not really, but it's constantly suggested throughout the film. Oh, you've lost weight. You look really good. So now what we're hearing in the background of the film is there's some major changes for this guy who was locked up. And we did see that when he was in the hospital that he was exercising quite a bit. Almost probably more so to, like, blow off his energy, because somebody who's bipolar can get, like, this energy, like, out of nowhere where, you know, all of a sudden they could zoom through your house and clean it from head, you know, all stories, like, in 1 hour. They just, it's a real huge burst. And those big bursts and changes, whether you're really happy or you're really depressed, you know, those are the sort of manic periods. And in a hospital, of course, you're not at home, so you sort of have to do with what you have. So as we move along with this, people aren't really sure what to do with him, and he's sort of not really sure what to do with himself, except he has one thought that he just does not, and I talked about that on the episode intro. Sometimes we have this one thought, and that's more important than the realities that are surrounding it or what's best for us. But we just have that one thought. For instance, like, an example would be like, you meet somebody, your friends in your past or people you've known who just want to be married. They want to be married, married, married. They don't, it's more important for them to be married than it is to actually know who the person is, to actually love them, to get along with them, or anything else. It's all about being married. And then what you tend to find out when you're just attached to this one specific narrowed outcome is that's what you get, that one little narrowed outcome, but the other parts aren't so great because you have to holistically consider the things that you want in life. But so we have, this is our whole drive in our film, that this man wants to get his wife back, and he's going to do everything or anything to make sure she understands that he's better, he's okay, and they have to be together because she's the most beautiful woman and they're meant to be together in his mind. What's interesting about it is he doesn't really consider who she was. Mm-hmm. And that makes me think when he first got together with her that something was askew already in the beginning. So everybody in the film is constantly telling those people, I mean, telling this man not to sort of not to think about her, because they believe that she's the reason that he completely broke apart, which is hugely interesting in this film, because it's like everyone acts like that whole incident about the affair and finding it that way was the reason this guy is acting the way he does. He acts the way he does because he's bipolar. And guess what? As we look at Dad and Dad's behavior, he's bipolar. Mm-hmm. And then we start to realize, oh my goodness, there's some legacy going on here. So all the things that we first initially see, you know, the book by its cover is not as it seems. And then I hope everyone else really noticed all the things that the mom did to try to compensate for these two bipolar people that are bouncing around in her life. Mm-hmm. What did you think about what she had to deal with? Do you think okay, let me ask this. Do you think the mom helped or hurt the situation?
Well, she was kind of an enabler.
Right.
So, you know, to
absolutely.
Me, you know, I think she tried to smooth it out. I think she, in her way, felt she was helping, but she, and, you know, there was a lot of history, of course, we didn't get. You know, the dad getting kicked out of the games forever. Could never go to the football games, you know. You know, and putting her, you know, maybe she just thought that was normal, you know, all those kind of behaviors.
Yeah, the game was integral to this film. I don't know if you noticed in the very beginning as they're leaving the hospital, you see the stadium. And they're
mm-hmm.
already setting you up, like, how important that is to the family and to the story. And then later, you get home and dad's watching the game, you know, the Eagles, you know, Philadelphia Eagles, blah, blah, blah. And you know, and then you have to wear the right, you cannot believe how much they went on about the jersey. The jersey and whose jersey you're wearing. I mean, right. Most people think, okay, it's a jersey. It's like, no, that one's good. Yeah, which one are you wearing? I mean, the detail about which jersey.
That and where the three remotes were.
Exactly.
You had to have the three remotes. His father had OCD, you know, tendencies along his bipolar. And I'm not sure if they always come together, but I do know a bit about the OCD and, you know, a lot of these behaviors. And I think that they do kind of overlap. OCD overlaps with ADHD and autism and all that stuff. So, yeah, it was, you know, it really just made me feel so thankful to be normal, quote, unquote.
And when Lydia says OCD, just in case you don't know, because they do a lot of abbreviations with psychology, and it means obsessive compulsive disorder. And that's one of those disorders where people will do the same thing over and over and over and over, and they check things over and over and over, and they're so acute about every detail in their life that you start to sort of notice something just a little bit off. And we have another caller. Welcome. Go ahead, pop in your name.
Thank you. Sure, you can pop in my name.
Her name is Lydia. Nina.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yes,
Nina from Canada. Welcome.
Yeah, all the way from the glow cold.
Yeah, you can call in to the United States, but you keep your cold with you. You understand? We don't want any of that snowy stuff that you're always leaking into our state.
Sorry about that, but it's nice and warm up here now.
Yeah, here today too.
So the next big stage of this film is this guy meets a woman who's the sister of his best pal's wife. And what I thought was really interesting about that meet is it's almost like when people match up people and their reasons to match them up are really strange. Like, oh, why don't we put Bobby and Susie together? Because doesn't Bobby like to skateboard? And your sister, I mean, doesn't she like wheels or something? The reasonings are either like, oh, you two are kind of people that get on our nerves, so you guys would probably get along. It's kind of how they thrust them together. Like they both have some sort of a problem. And so what's interesting is it's almost like the sister almost wants her problem to go away with some other problematic person. Then they don't have to deal with her as much because she's dealing with somebody else. And as it turns out, she had a huge precipitating event in her life as well. Her husband died, and it really brought out her issues. So. Anyway, that's what happened, and this other woman is played by Jennifer Lawrence, is very quirky and sort of in your face about things that you're sort of like, most people take a while to say. Like, if you want to sleep with me, you can. You know, you're sort of this way or that way, and they've probably only known each other less than an hour. And... Which here he, the guy who's both bipolar and hopelessly in love with an idea of who his wife is, he's completely, I'm not going to say it's repulsive, he just doesn't quite know how to deal with it. And coming from a family with a dad who's OCD, obsessive compulsive, disorder, which will, if you live with somebody or you're raised in a house with someone who's obsessive and compulsive with a disorder, you pick up some of those behaviors, not because that's who you are. It's just like any of us grow up in a household where people, you know, the way that you put your toilet paper in the rack is the same way because that's what your mom and your dad and everybody did it. You know, the way you use your... that's really all it comes down to when you don't really have the disorder, but you're constantly around it. Pick it up like a language. So anyway, this is all about how these two start interacting, and it's really a rough ride because they're sort of into their own issues. But then they start, the crack that comes into their armor is when they see, each one sees the other one become vulnerable, and they actually start taking on a protective mode with each other. And that's the part where they sort of understand that they understand because of their own issues that other people around them don't quite understand because they're not quite the same. Which makes me think, like, it's kind of funny that they sort of got paired off because people sort of like, you know, we don't really want to deal with you. Or they sort of like think maybe it'll sort of help fix them or something. And it actually turned out to be the best thing that happened. And then we have this whole dancing competition that comes in because this girl that's sort of quirky and has her mental balance issues or emotional or behavioral balance issues, she likes dancing, and it's like that becomes her obsession. It's for her, it's a way to sort of fight her way back to normalcy or to feel like she's worthy.
Or it's her therapy. She describes it as such, and I do believe it's her, like, running is his therapy, the dancing is her therapy.
Well, yeah, we use therapy. Most of us use therapy to get to a state of feeling what? Balanced. And, you know, and balanced, or most, I don't think most people think in terms of balance. I think they think in terms of self-worth. Okay, everyone thinks that I'm a screw-up, but, you know, if I can do this dancing competition, at least I can say I'm that. You know, there's some worth to me, and I'm okay if I can do this. So I think it's matched up in with worth, and I think that most therapeutic issues that people have a lot to do with that. And people that are, that's my personal opinion from a psychological point of view.
Although she had installed the dance studio in her parents' garage, you know, remodeled it, and she describes it as her therapy, and you know, the discipline and all that. That if she can do that, I think that the competition is a factor, but not, it's not the precipitating part of her doing the dance. I think the dance brought her back to some
No, you're right. I'm not saying that the dance competition is what she, all of a sudden she decided, well, I'm going to do that. No, I believe that the dance competition is something that is born out of her, you know, her therapy. Yeah, that she, her self-therapy. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'm not, yeah, no. No, what I'm saying is that it's a pinnacle for her, and it's a big deal for her. And the reason it's a big deal is because it means more than a dance studio thing. It's more than just her therapy. It's a milestone for her. Like, okay, I'm coming back from where I was. That when she, the way that she went off the path is, she became extremely promiscuous, and she started sleeping with everyone. And what's sad about it, as she talks about it, she seems completely disconnected, like it's no big deal. clearly it's a big deal. And everyone else sort of thinks of her as sort of being, quote-unquote, slutty or promiscuous, but he doesn't. I mean, he sees that there's something, you know, that this is a symptom of somebody having been impacted by this huge event, a loss of her husband. And that's why he becomes protective, because he can see that little vulnerability, which is brilliant the way they did that in this film. Okay, I know I've been talking an awful lot. Oops, I don't know how.
Linda?
I'm sorry, Otlin. Sorry. Somehow I clicked you off.
No, I got booted out and had to come back in. I've been listening.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
To look at the screen more often. Okay, so now we're all back on to the page. I think we're sort of abreast of where we all need to be for the film. Let's get the discussion going so I'm not blah, blah, blabbing the whole time. Thoughts? You know, who wants to jump in and say whatever they want to say?
Okay, I want to say that about bipolar, that he doesn't feel that way when he went, because he just reacted to what he saw with his wife. But my thing with the bipolar, was he bipolar or was he just reacting to what had happened to his wife? You know, seeing his wife like that, was that really a bipolar action? He was sent to a place that, of course, he met Tiffany, who is got OCD or whatever is wrong with her. But is that really bipolar because he acted intensely and physically?
Yes, actually, he shows all the symptoms of being bipolar. What you're basically seeing is huge of, you know, these kind of impacts. You know, like one of us might be, you know, upset, or we might cry, or, you know, we might get angry and try to beat him with a pan or something. But this guy just went. Yeah, there are people who might actually try to, you know, harm someone and put them in the hospital for a few months, but there's the other actions that are supporting his diagnosis.
Oh, okay.
How, you know, as he went looking through the house in the middle of the night, he's trying to find this specific paper or picture or video, and he's tearing through everything. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And then his parents he'd go in there and he'd say, I'm going to, or he's complaining about the book. I can't believe they taught this book in school, high school, 2 a.m. And the husband's like, Daddy De Niro's like, well, it's 2 a.m. Can't we do this another time? And it's like, and he completely is ignoring what they're saying because he's in one of those manic moods.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, then I understand that. See, I read it. I didn't see the movie. I read it. So it's different than seeing it. Yeah. But now I understand.
And then she also was bipolar.
Oh, she was? Okay.
I believe she was, because for a few things, and one was that she had said that at one point in the marriage, her husband wanted to have a baby, and that she said, and I can barely take care of myself. And people who are bipolar are, they're quirky and they're different, and they can be very attractive because of that. But when they're in their low time, it can be very scary, and they can hurt themselves or they can hurt others.
Yes, it can. I've been around.
Okay, Nina, you were going to say something?
No, I'm just listening, because I've lived with a bipolar person for a long time. And, maybe gathering a little bit of insight. And, sometimes you guys are right on the money. My feeling on this is I think if you're taking the drugs and they do find the right combination for you, you can get somewhat control of your life, But if you refuse to take those drugs, and as many of them do, because they feel once they're on the drugs, everything's running really smoothly, they don't need them anymore. And they get
and he was he actually did that. He didn't want to take the drugs.
Yep.
Remember, at 2 in the morning, they like to take the drugs.
And he was spitting them out in the hospital and everything else. Yeah. And I've seen that happen. Seen it happen over and over and over again. And again, it's my daughter. She would stop taking her drugs, or she wouldn't have taken them yet, and she'd come up to talk to me, and she would just be all over the place and just bouncing and happy with one statement, sad with the next. And I'd look at her and I'd say, go downstairs and take your meds. And she'd look at me and she'd swear at me and tell me I didn't know what I was talking about. And then I'd look her and I'd make her look me straight in the eye and I'd say to her, have you taken your meds? Well, no. Go downstairs and take them. Then come up and talk to me.
Yeah.
So it's a double-edged sword because the meds have their side effects, and one of the side effects is that they don't feel normal, quote unquote. And what they're not feeling is they're not feeling that the manic, the phase where they can get a lot done, they can be super creative. You know, my sister's bipolar, and I've actually have quite a bit of dealings with bipolar, and but they like the way they feel, and they don't like the way they feel. They feel and they describe
fuzzy.
Pretty well in the movie. They feel fuzzy or flat. Flat was a very good description when they said that. You know, they're missing the uptime.
If there is uptime, sometimes there isn't. Like there wasn't, I never noticed a whole lot with Tam. Uptime as far as wanting to go party, but as far as rushing around doing things, not going to happen.
The other thing is, you know, some of the behavioral changes that are found with bipolar is they talk extremely fast. They'll jump from idea to idea. It's, you know, you see their racing thoughts and the way that they're complete, you know, their movements, everything becomes, you know, a little more like somebody who kind of seems like they've had too much coffee. They're really restless. Their sleep is like very little sleep, and don't say it because I know I get very sleep, but it's more school related. I'm just saying, it's like old me. But they have all these unrealistic beliefs in their abilities, and they're extremely impulsive, and they love things that have to do with pleasure at the moment. If it's pleasurable, then they're there, and they want it more and more and more. They also have a lot of impulsive sex. So they're basically, she's bipolar. She fits all the symptoms, as does he, as does Dad fits it too, but he really does have that other.
He has the OCD as well.
OCD, yeah.
Well, that can
and
be
then mom
that
is,
can just that can
go
be
ahead.
A tag along behavior. The OCD can be a tag along.
Oh, of course, yeah. So yeah, I mean, and so Lennis, I think that was a great question. You know, is this because it happened or not? And the reason that's such a great question, Lennis, is because that's what goes on in people's lives. They think that all of a sudden these people change because of a specific event. But the reality is, like I stated earlier in the definition of bipolar, a lot of people don't even know. You know, they go many, many years without being diagnosed. How that can shift your life. Like if you start out your life, and, you know, somehow they're able to catch it early, and you get on medication, it becomes a normative thing in your life. But if you're much older, say you make it to your 30s or your 50s, and you weren't on medication, it's not normal for you. And the how you view it is different. And so it makes it even harder to manage it.
Well, I want to go back to
I don't know how old your daughter
was
when you guys found out, Nina. But I would imagine it wasn't when she was 10 or 11 years old.
No, it wasn't.
I mean, you
it
may
was,
have
she
noticed.
Was in her, you know, yeah, we noticed.
You may have
things,
noticed,
but
you may not have actually had the diagnosis where she was on medication.
Well, she wasn't diagnosed until her late 20s, early 30s, so there is that on top of it. But
right.
I think it was really brought out because of her use of street drugs, to be honest with you.
Thank you. That's what I wanted to cover, because thank you for saying that, because the lady that I know, her child, he was smoking marijuana. And so when the bipolar came out, he was, what, almost 19 years old. They thought that he had got a hold of some bad drugs and flipped out. And then come to find out, no, her child was bipolar. Now, they put him on medication. The side effects of the medication was deteriorating to his liver and kidneys. So what did he do? He went back to smoking the marijuana. Well, the marijuana actually calmed him down, believe it or not. But that's not what his parents wanted for him. I mean, his dad's a minister. He doesn't want his son on
drugs. Marijuana is
my
thing, but she wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, ma'am.
Marijuana is one thing, but no, she was on the hard stuff. Like, we're talking crack, the whole nine yards, and that's pretty hard on anybody's mind and body, so.
Yeah.
I really think that probably brought out the symptoms a little bit more.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there's a self-medication type thing when they, you know, they feel they're not normal, and then they want, you know, they know that there's something, so they look for things to self-medicate with, like, you know, marijuana and alcohol, and a lot of times they will switch to harder and harder. I don't think one necessarily correlates to the other all the time, but I think that they're looking to feel quote-unquote normal.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that's another cigarette use. You know, cigarette use in jails is very predominant, and that is because there's a lot of mental health issues in our jails, and it calms them down. It's addictive, but it calms them down.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they're in the jails because they started closing down institutions because of, you know, the fact that they didn't really monitor them well, and there's a lot of negative behaviors that happen that intense cause, but nobody really thought about the fact that you're closing down all these hospitals that basically they have nowhere to go. And so then what ends up happening is people who have mental health imbalances, then they end up being pulled in by the legal system, the penal system. And so that's a big portion of what's in jail, is people who really could have been treated either by an in-house institution or an outhouse type thing, but we don't have the money for the health care and the money for the institutions. And so now they're not being treated. They're just being exposed to criminal elements. And
well, that's how people end up at home with their parents, with their family.
Well, yeah, and that's the other
that
thing is, like,
is
most of the family, most of the family aren't prepared to deal with that.
Right. Well,
because,
no, but then it puts the family between a rock and a hard place, because, like you say, they are closing down a lot of mental institutions. Well, you don't want to see your kid just out there where God knows what could happen. So you end up, now the child is living with you, this grown child that you're trying to make sure that they take their medication and everybody can get along with them and them with everybody else. But it's a strain on the family. It's a mental strain and probably a physical.
That's the best situation that can happen if somebody has mental health issues. But the most common one, because they aren't starting to close the hospital down. They did that, like, 10, 20 years ago. So
under Reagan. When they started closing down the
institution. Well, 1980s. So that's, it's actually farther, you know, it's just in my mind, 1980s is yesterday, but it's even farther back. I just didn't have the actual citation dates for you. You're absolutely right, Nina, and you're right, Lennis. And what that begets with this is a lot of homeless people, because the family won't take any more, you're out of here. And also they end up in prison. And then so it's almost like some kid who just maybe didn't have his you know, hyperactivity drug, ended up in jail and now is getting raped and getting, you know, possibly AIDS and God knows what else, to where now their behaviors are going to be even more reactive because they're being abused and assaulted constantly somewhere that they shouldn't be. You know, and that's why there's a big issue in mental health in hospitals and care and the funding now, because this, our faction, mental health faction in the United States, they get the least amount of money and funding. And if you even have insurance, most times they will give you 8 sessions where you don't have to pay, then you have to pay more money. So you're constantly being penalized by having something that you're born with. You know, it's mental health and nobody can really see it. You know, if you're born, if you're a thalidomide baby and, you know, your hand's gone, then, you know, people are willing to give you money, or you have a club foot or something that's really visual physically, then they say, oh, yeah, well, this person, you know, is handicapped or disabled, so we need to send money there. But when it comes to mental health issues, they don't. And it is one of the things that I'm so grateful that you ladies have called in, or anyone who calls in or listens, because that's one of my issues I hope will come out of this show, is that people hear some of the mental health aspects that are affecting our country and the world that need help. You know, we need help. It's not because you can't see it. You know, because you can't see it makes it even, it makes it even a bigger problem. And it means those people are more compromised than somebody who can't walk or who is blind. I'm not saying that those aren't other issues, but they're no less than any one of us. They are no less.
Right.
They're no less.
Okay,
and
well, I have a question.
And they're more in some issues. I mean, you know, we can liken what's going on when we have mass shootings. You know, those people are not. They're not. They have some mental issues that have gone undiagnosed or unnoticed.
Ignored.
Or something.
Ignored.
Or ignored. Or the families, you know, have already spent hundreds of thousands of dollars and they don't have it anymore.
That's right.
They don't have that money anymore. And nobody will help them.
Yeah. And then
we have to take responsibility
for ourselves.
And
it's a shame. We have money
for
wars. We have money for wars, but we have no money for our mental health. That is a shame. Okay, I'll get off my soapbox.
Yeah, so... Now, you know, before I start completely bawling, yes, and this is why I'm in the this is why I'm going for the degree. But before I start bawling, let's get back to the movie, just because I'd like us to get towards the end of it and where we go. Quick shout out to Mr. Chris Tucker, because he's just adorable when he goes in there and they're doing the little dancing competition. And he finally gets out of the hospital officially. and I can't even remember right now if he got out officially in a way that was weird. No, he got out and he wasn't supposed to be out. And he became the lucky charm because he was connected to the son of Robert De Niro for his game betting. So, Lord. And they came back and got him during that game, I think. They showed up at the game. So anyway, they're doing a dancing competition. He has agreed to do this dancing competition with Tiffany so that he can, so that she'll help him get back in the good graces of his wife. And that's what she sort of holds over him. But she has also come to feel strong feelings for him. And it is obvious that he feels strong feelings for her, but he can't see past the outcome that is more important than life itself, the flat outcome, I like to call it. And so everything is coming to this competition. It even gets down to the dad betting on the competition, betting his house, all of his money, all these different, you know, huge things. And so now the competition becomes even bigger for everybody. What's interesting is that they only need to get 5 out of 10, which is like mediocre. They just have to get that as far as their score.
Bet.
And so all of this comes about, and yet he's feeling better, you know, he's getting better, but he still has the cues. That's why the whole thing over, when they finally get to the stadium, because he can still go to the stadium, here comes the huge fight. And then that puts him, where did that put them? Did that put him back into the hospital? Yeah, he went back in the hospital, right?
No.
Oh. Okay.
The huge fight? No, he went to, you know, they arrested or they took them away. You don't know what's going on, but then he's back at the house. And that's when Tiffany suggests, she's a very smart, she's very, very intelligent. And so
yes.
is he, but that's when she suggests the whole dance competition. And that she suggests, she
that's right.
implants in the mind of the father that he's not the lucky charm. I'm the lucky charm because every time he's been with me, the Eagles have won. It's when he
was
wasn't
brilliant.
With me.
I love that.
Wasn't that brilliant? That was really
yes,
brilliant.
Yes, I loved it.
She played
yes.
right into him. She is one smart cookie.
So then
and doesn't
we
even like football.
End up, let's, you know, kick forward to the dancing competition.
Mm-hmm.
And here's where vulnerabilities and things that come out with bipolar people, they'll, you know, it, you don't know what's going to make them get upset and then, you know, resort to their old cues. Because I don't believe it. This he's taking medication, but I don't know if she is. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. But her feelings are so engaged for him now that she's reactive to everything he does, and she tells him that the wife is going to come, but in reality that letter that he got to read from the wife wasn't even from the wife. So he's thinking, this is great, I'm finally going to get this opportunity to show her that I'm better. And then everyone else with the whole bet, and then she sees him talk. She sees the wife come, when he saw that she was there before the dance. Was that correct, ladies?
Yes.
Okay. And so,
she's
already feeling sort of dejected and was getting ready to engage in the promiscuous aspect that, you know, the sex, immediate sex or whatever, or just almost like she was ready to give it up, and he, you know, snaps her back, and it was a wonderful dance, and everybody else, you know, it's like, oh, I'm so sorry, when they only get 5, and everybody else is, they're all excited and overjoyed because they... Oh, yeah, it's telling us that we have very little time left. This is such a great discussion, ladies. Oh, my gosh. I'm sorry. Sounds like we're probably not going to be able to make it to the very end of the show. But if you
yeah,
haven't seen...
Keep talking because I'm not sure that it'll cut off right away.
Yeah,
okay.
Keep talking. I would like to say something just for people that are listening in. About bipolar people, don't put those people in a social stigma or stereotype them, and don't be prejudiced. Brenda mentioned this at the beginning of the show, so I just want to reiterate that because it touches my heart. So no social stigma, people. Don't stereotype them, and don't be prejudiced toward them either. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, that's sweet of you to say. That's so sweet of you to say. That's true. So we're at the end of the competition, everyone. And they do what they need to do to win the bet for Dad and get him out of the hole. And then also he feels good. She's close to him, and she totally wants to enjoy that moment with just him, but then he goes to speak to the wife. She doesn't understand why. She doesn't understand why, but she goes ahead, and she stands back, and then she just feels dejected, and he basically goes and tells his wife basically goodbye.
Yeah.
Because he realizes that she wasn't everything that he thought she would be. And then he comes back to share it with this great person that he's obviously in love with, and the person who's been there and who's accepting and protective of him. And she had walked away thinking that it was just like another time where she was going to be hurt, because she actually mentioned that she, you know, throughout in the movie, that she hadn't found anyone that, you know, was, I guess, worthy of her or who loved her or whatever. And her self-worth and everything, again, comes back into that moment. And when he goes back out, like, hey, and she's upset. But what I loved about it more than anything is how he said, she said in the letter, da-da-da-da, he knows that she would never say that. He realizes that she's not that nice. When he reads that letter, he realizes that it's her who wrote the letter. And, you know, and then she starts arguing about that if you knew this the whole time, but it's the moment that we finally see that they admit that they totally love each other, and then there's the big kiss. Hey, this movie is no different than something like Casablanca, only this turned out better. And it's mm-hmm. just as great of a movie. So you need to see it. Understand about the people that are around you. There's a lot of people with bipolar issues on varying degrees. There's some that are really severe, some that are really low. One of the aspects is they think about, some when they're in depressive mode, some of them think about, talk about suicide all the time, da 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 da. I know someone like that. It would drive me crazy. And even though I tend to not think of them as bipolar, it's a big sign about the fact that they actually are bipolar, and along with the other things, and in medication management, and how you treat everyone, how you accept them for who they are, as Lena said.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess everyone should give their last thoughts about the movie, as long as we're still recording.
Yeah, I love the movie. I cried in the movie. I felt really sad in the movie, and I didn't think of it as a comedy. There was comedic moments, but it was definitely worth watching. Great acting, great storyline. I felt like it was very true. From knowing a few bipolar people, it just felt really true to me in a lot of ways. You know, these are people who are functional. A lot of times they function for a long time until something happens where they're really set off and maybe the law gets involved or whatever, but or they have a breakup or whatever. So, and, you know, and he came to realize that he was a functioning, you know, I forgot how he said it, but he realized in the hospital that, no, this is me. I am bipolar.
Right.
Great movie. Highly recommend it.
Lennis?
Agree with Lydia. Great movie.
Yeah.
Learning
yeah.
tool.
Yeah. So thank you, ladies. Somehow Nina dropped off, and thank you, Nina. I'm sorry you had to go. It could have been the radio thing kicking you off, but your comments and sharing your personal experiences, we all appreciate it. We really do. And, you know, we hope the best for you and anybody else who's living with somebody who has bipolar issues or somebody who watches monster movies all the time. You know, either way, you know, my heart goes out with you, and hopefully you won't have to watch too many monster movies, whatever. But, my love out to people who give their care and attention and non-judgmental friendship to people around them that are different. different does not mean bad. It just means different. Okay. Mm-hmm. See us next week, ladies, when I believe we'll be, not just ladies, gentlemen, whoever's listening, we're going to be doing Deliver Us from Eva.
Oh,
and that will be a wild ride. If you haven't seen it, you must watch it. Okay, and let's go ahead and real quickly, if we can get some more time for that. Tomorrow is Friday Traffic Jam. It's Valentine's Day. And, oh, my God, make sure you have a condom if you don't want children. If you've been trying to have children, tomorrow's the time to listen to that show. Pop it in. Do the Afternoon Delight thing. Full moon to boot. You got everything going for you. Get those babies made. Get those condoms to avoid the babies if you don't want them. Tomorrow's going to be a wild ride for Friday Traffic Jam. And then and we're going to continue the love of Valentine's Day as it's, you know, love me do month. On Saturday, Lydia is taking us into, go ahead, Lydia.
You are worthy. You are worthy.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to round out the week on Sunday with Linus is in the studio. And Linus?
And that's going to be advertising. So anyone that has a business, free advertising Sunday on the show at 3 o'clock PST time. I want to give people an opportunity, Valentine's and Black History Month. But it doesn't matter to me what your race or culture is. Free advertising. Let people know what your business is, and you never know. You might get some callbacks or feedback,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, remember it is Black History Month, folks, and, you know, love someone of any color, I say. But, you know, recognize the ones that got just a little bit of shading in there to, you know, let them know that Black History Month or not, we love you. No matter what color you are, we love you. Come on.
Yeah,
and
right.
The history of blacks is integral to this, the United States and the entire world, just like
mm-hmm.
the history of any other race is integral
yep.
to the whole world. Okay.
Yeah.
Next Tuesday for me, I'll be back on BYO Brilliance, and we will be talking about the brilliance of tracking your goals. Okay.
Mm.
Bye, everybody.
Okay, bye. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.